His parents and the doctor entered in a small parade, his mother and Dr. Brinkett with false, bright smiles.
"And how are we feeling this afternoon, my boy?"
"Fine." Julian kept his gaze on a gloomy painting of fruit in a bowl. He hated that painting. His mother made a clucking sound.
"You are not fine. You've hardly left your room. You won't eat. Look at him, Doctor. He's as thin as a rail."
Dr. Brinkett frowned.
"How is your appetite, Julian?"
"It is fine. I am fine. I only need peace and quiet." Julian's father gestured at one of the room's untidy stack of books.
"What you need is to stop filling your mind with all this rubbish and get out in the world. You will never regain your strength by turning pages."
Julian compressed his lips. He'd never had much strength to begin with, as his father well knew. As a child, he'd always been the first to contract illnesses, and the last to be cured of them. Whereas his older brothers had grown into big, strapping men with muscles as large as any labourer's, Julian was shorter, slighter. His mother liked to say that he had
a delicate constitution.
Now Dr. Brinkett chuckled uncomfortably and rubbed his hands together.
"We've a fine idea for you, Julian. One that will give you peace and quiet, yet also expose you to fresh air and exercise."
Narrowing his eyes skeptically, Julian asked, "What?"
"The seaside, my boy, the lovely seaside, and it's all arranged for you already. You shall travel by rail to Bithington. A coach shall take you from there, 2 hours north, to Urchin Cove, a quaint little village, quite serene. And you shall have all the sunshine and bracing sea air you could want. Just the thing to make you well again."
The doctor sounded like a tourism salesman. Julian didn't care for the idea at all. What did it really matter where he was? He could be lonely at the seaside just as neatly as he could in the city. And it would be a pleasure to be away from his mother's eternal hovering.
"You can have a bit of exercise in Urchin Cove. A walk on the beach, a bracing swim, and it may be that you will find a bit of adventure."
He winked jovially. Resigned to his fate, Julian squeezed his eyes shut. "When do I leave?" He might have enjoyed the rail journey if he could have been allowed the swaying motion to lull him to sleep. But his mother had used his travels as an excuse to shop and had filled trunk after trunk with clothing he would probably never wear. As a result, Julian's compartment was almost entirely filled with his luggage. His feet were propped on a suitcase, a blanket spread over his lap. He leaned his cheek against the cool window glass and watched the scenery roll by. It was late afternoon by the time he reached Bithington. The porters gave him sour looks over the number and weight of his bags, then scurried away as soon as he handed them a few coppers. Weary and hungry, he stood, abandoned in front of the train station for quite some time. He was beginning to feel the first twinges of panic when a large, disreputable-looking wagon rattled to a stop in front of him. It could not, even under the most charitable description, be called a coach. It looked like the sort of vehicle a farmer might use to haul turnips to market, or perhaps even less savoury loads. The dragons that pulled the cart were stocky and rather lumpy, with little shine to their green scales. They growled impatiently as the driver looked down at Julian from her high seat.
"Mr. Massey?"
the driver asked, and Julian gave up the last bit of hope that this conveyance wasn't intended for him.
"Yes,"
he answered quietly. "I suppose so." The driver pushed a tangled mess of grey hair behind her ears.
"Well, get your kit in the wagon then. I want to be home by supper time."
He sighed and lifted the nearest trunk. But when she saw how he struggled to get the heavy pieces on board, she heaved an aggrieved sigh of her own and hopped down from the seat with an audible
woof.
Despite being older than his mother and quite round, she was clearly much stronger than Julian. She made short work of the loading, then rolled her eyes as he scrambled ungracefully up to the seat. The wood sagged a little when she sat beside him. She barked a
"Hey up!"
At her dragons and flicked a lazy switch at the larger one's tail. And then they were off, the cart heaving and shaking over the rutted road.
"Name's Nerva Crabbottom,"
she said as she turned the cart onto a wider street that led out of town.
"I own the house you're staying in. Finest holiday home in Urchin Cove."
She enunciated holiday home very clearly, as if she wanted to make sure he understood the grandness of it.